Dumbledore now swooped down upon one of the fragile silver instruments, whose function Harry had never known, carried it over to his desk, sat down facing them again, and tapped it gently with the tip of his wand. The instrument tinkled into life at once with rhythmic clinking noises. Tiny puffs of pale green smoke issued from the minuscule silver tube at the top. Dumbledore watched the smoke closely, his brow furrowed, and after a few seconds the tiny puffs became a steady stream of smoke that thickened and coiled in the air. A serpent's head grew out of the end of it, opening its mouth wide. Harry wondered whether the instrument was confirming his story. He looked eagerly at Dumbledore for a sign that he was right, but Dumbledore did not look up.
"Naturally, naturally,"
murmured Dumbledore apparently to himself, still observing the stream of smoke without the slightest sign of surprise.
"But in essence divided?"
Harry could make neither head nor tail of this question. The smoke serpent, however, split itself instantly into two snakes, both coiling and undulating in the dark air. With a look of grim satisfaction, Dumbledore gave the instrument another gentle tap with his wand. The clinking noise slowed and died, and the smoke serpents grew faint, became a formless haze, and vanished. Dumbledore replaced the instrument upon its spindly little table. Harry saw many of the old headmasters in the portraits follow him with their eyes, then, realizing that Harry was watching them, hastily pretend to be sleeping again. Harry wanted to ask what the strange silver instrument was for, but before he could do so, there was a shout from the top of the wall to their right. The wizard called Everard had reappeared in his portrait, panting slightly.
"Dumbledore! What news?" said Dumbledore at once. "I yelled until someone came running," said the wizard, who was mopping his brow on the curtain behind him. "Said I'd heard something moving downstairs. They weren't sure whether to believe me, but went down to check. You know there are no portraits down there to watch from. Anyway, they carried him up a few minutes later. He doesn't look good. He's covered in blood. I ran along to Elfrieda Craig's portrait to get a good view as they left."
"Good," said Dumbledore, as Ron made a convulsive movement.
"I take it Dillis will have seen him arrive then."
And moments later, the silver-ringleted witch had reappeared in her picture too. She sank, coughing, into her armchair and said,
"Yes, they've taken him to St. Mungo's, Dumbledore. They carried him past under my portrait. He looks bad."
"Thank you," said Dumbledore. He looked around at Professor McGonagall.
"Minerva, I need you to go and wake the other Weasley children."
"Of course."
Professor McGonagall got up and moved swiftly to the door. Harry cast a sideways glance at Ron, who was now looking terrified.
"And Dumbledore, what about Molly?"
said Professor McGonagall, pausing at the door.
"That will be a job for Fawkes when he has finished keeping a lookout for anybody approaching," said Dumbledore. "But she may already know. That excellent clock of hers."
Harry knew Dumbledore was referring to the clock that told, not the time, but the whereabouts and conditions of the various Weasley family members, and with a pang, he thought that Mr. Weasley's hand must, even now, be pointing at mortal peril. But it was very late. Mrs. Weasley was probably asleep, not watching the clock, and he felt cold as he remembered Mrs. Weasley's boggart turning into Mr. Weasley's lifeless body, his glasses askew, blood running down his face. But Mr. Weasley wasn't going to die. He couldn't. Dumbledore was now rummaging in a cupboard behind Harry and Ron. He emerged from it carrying a blackened old kettle, which he placed carefully upon his desk. He raised his wand and murmured,
"Portus."
For a moment the kettle trembled, glowing with an odd blue light. Then it quivered to a rest, as solidly black as ever. Dumbledore marched over to another portrait, this time of a clever-looking wizard with a pointed beard, who had been painted wearing the slithering colours of green and silver, and was apparently sleeping so deeply that he could not hear Dumbledore's voice when he attempted to rouse him.
"Phineas! Phineas!"
And now the subjects of the portraits lining the room were no longer pretending to be asleep. They were shifting around in their frames, the better to watch what was happening. When the clever-looking wizard continued to feign sleep, some of them shouted his name too.
"Phineas! Phineas! Phineas!"
He could not pretend any longer. He gave a theatrical jerk and opened his eyes wide.
"Did someone call? I need you to visit your other portrait again, Phineas," said Dumbledore. "I've got another message."